Episode 72. We're going to talk the Toronto Blue Jays, Bacon's Blue Jays. We tried recording this episode, and about 2 minutes in, we already butchered it. Luckily, that will not be posted here to the audio platforms that this podcast has somehow, some way found its way onto and has the ability for people to listen to, which is a concern in itself. But B, the Blue Jays, they come in this year. Last season, 89-73 record, put them third in the AL East, did slip into the wild card. And across category-wise on the offensive side, above league average pretty much in all categories. Same goes for the pitching side as well. Some of the names they added this offseason, Justin Turner, Yariel Rodriguez, might even butchered his name there. What a night for Ty. I want to take a step back, though, and look at this offseason that has happened here for the Blue Jays, who have been tied to way too many names. But from the Blue Jays fans' perspective, right, being a Jays fan, what was your overall take on the offseason? Because you guys went on a roller coaster and it broke down, and you decided to go back on the roller coaster again and it broke down again. So I just want you to kind of fill us in on how it's gone for you.
Yeah, I mean, they almost got the best player in baseball. I thought that was a cool 24 hours there where we were all flight tracking and having our fun. But it turned out it was the guy from Shark Tank and Dragon's Den. We're appealing to both sides of the border right there, Shark Tank and Dragon's Den. Super interesting offseason that the Blue Jays had there. Obviously, you don't get Shohei Ohtani. Juan Soto goes to the Yankees in that time period where it looked like you may not get Shohei Ohtani. Turned out they were probably third on Shohei Ohtani, the same offer that the Dodgers made, the Giants agreed to, and the Blue Jays agreed to. And it was pretty much radio silence from then on. So I think that set the public, the Blue Jays public at large, up for what was probably a disappointing offseason. But if you kind of take a step back and take a 30,000 foot view on it, there's certainly some kind of interesting additions that we can definitely get into. I think, yeah.
This team is so fun, and it's also so stressful.
You must not be a Jays fan. Yeah.
It has just been so stressful to watch it for you the last couple of years, dude. And my hot take is this. Could we not see this team in the playoffs?
It might just be stupid enough to work. That's kind of, I think, the slogan for the 2024.
Okay, so I literally have been sitting here for the last like 4 days after you and I agreed to do a podcast to talk about the Jays. And like, I remember saying it on the other episode where I said, you know, hey, I might have some hot takes to give to my boy Chris on the next show. And I from then thought, well, they're really, really good offensively. They really didn't lose as much as I thought they did. Matt Chapman, of course, over at third base, but Justin Turner is fantastic. And they added IKF. And they brought back Kiermaier and you know, other things look good. And then the pitching side, okay, they still have Barrios, they have Bassett, they have Gausman, they have Kikuchi, like a lot of pieces. Then they add Rodriguez into the fold. But like, dude, I'm letting my mind kind of wander, and I'm just like, why do I have a bad feeling about this team?
Well, I think the first reason is that they underperformed last year. The bats, you said that was a pretty good offensive team, and I think if you look at the metrics, they probably were super underperforming. You go back and look at Dalton Varsho, a guy they traded a top five prospect in baseball for, very underwhelming. You look at Alejandro Kirk coming off a 2022 All-Star season, 2022 Silver Slugger, unbelievably underwhelming season. Vladimir Guerrero Jr., you know, he's not the 2021 guy, but I think everybody kind of thought he would be in between 2021, where he comes second in AL MVP voting, and 2022, where he was really not that good a hitter, quite frankly. And 2023 is a lot more of the same. You know, he wasn't really a value add in any way whatsoever. And you sort of start to look at how this team fashions itself. I think last year they had a bit of a turn into a pitching and defense type of team with the idea that they would have enough hitting to win a bunch of games 3-1. And it turned out they lost a bunch of games 3-1. And they were underperforming in kind of clutch situations, seventh inning or later, runners in scoring position. And it was a really frustrating watch, quite frankly. You know, the pitching, which we'll get to in a bit here, kept them in a lot of games, and the offense kind of, like, I think Vlad led the league in double plays. Kirk was up there. Matt Chapman, after April, was one of the worst hitters in baseball. There's just really quite a lot to unpack about what this team that yes, has, you know, 7, 8, 9 pretty good names in the lineup, but are they 7, 8, 9 pretty good hitters? I'm not convinced.
So let's start. Let's kind of roll across this team here. And I actually mean this. When I brought on the Javier Reyes for the Padres episode, and I brought on Matt Cozy, who's part of Locked On Cubs, and Javier is part of Locked On Padres, but and bringing in somebody who is so passionate about the team that follows it day in, day out, and knows the intricacies of the team, I am so excited to talk about this because there's been episodes where we talk about some teams, and it's hard to really digest what this team is truly going to look like because of maybe not myself or one of my co-hosts watching the team day in, day out. So I look at this lineup right now. Okay. So looking across the outfield, now I will be as I know that you're a listener of the Big Fly Pod day in, day out.
Love the pod.
Thank you. You know that we start from left field, we go over to right field, and we use FanGraphs projections. At the end of this, if there's any changes that you think are going to be made, let us know. But right now, across the outfield, left field, they have Dalton Varsho. In center field, they have Kevin Kiermaier, one of the best in the game from a defensive standpoint. And in right field, they have George Springer. Third base to first base. Third base, they have IKF. Over at short, they have one of the best in the game, Bo Bichette. At second base, right now, they have Kevin Biggio, which will be a really interesting topic for us to discuss. And then first base, they have who could be an AL MVP candidate on the cover of MLB The Show 24, Vladdy Guerrero Jr. Behind the dish, they have Alejandro Kirk. And on the bench, Danny Jansen.
They have who behind the plate?
Alejandro Kirk.
Danny Jansen.
Okay. And then Ernie Clement. Davis Snyder.
Let's start with the lineup here because I think what you're okay. What you're about to get into is kind of where
Nathan Lukes.
I'm gonna go. Yeah. He has 16 at bats last year,
and we'll go into and then the single A team will start there too. Oh, go ahead. Sorry, Bonds.
Maybe I'll go. Yeah. so I think what's interesting is they went into last season without a fourth outfielder. They had Nathan Lukes, who was kind of that fourth outfield guy, but really never played. Like they would do everything they could to make sure Nathan Lukes didn't get into the game. And I think they've kind of done that again this offseason. They're preferring to kind of paper over what that might look like. And I think it's a really interesting choice because if you look at what the lineup looks like versus lefties, like the lineup you gave there is probably exactly what we're going to see against righties. But if you look at the lineup versus lefties, probably one of Varsho or Kiermaier is going to sit depending on who's hot, who's healthy, who's had a rest in a little bit. And then probably Davis Snyder comes in and plays left field. The guy who had, I think, one of the more interesting rookie seasons in recent memory last year. You know, not just Blue Jays history, but recent Major League history. So I think that's an interesting one. You know, they're thin there, but if you look at how it looks in an ideal world, those are three really quite good outfielders, assuming certain things. You know, we look at this as it's spring, everybody's got hope. You kind of think, oh, Varsho's going to bounce back, and I think that's going to be a big theme to how we talk about this lineup. Varsho's a guy who needs to bounce back. Just quite frankly, he needs to bounce back. He was exactly the defender that they thought he was going to be. He was exactly the base runner that they thought he was going to be. He just swung and missed way too much. And there's a big hole in his strike zone at the top of the zone. You can beat him with hard stuff up. So if he's come into spring and he's addressed that, and that's what he said. That's what all the kind of publications are talking about. He's trying to get a flatter swing, and he's trying to make sure he can get to every part of the zone. If you can trade off some of that power for a little bit more contact so that he's on the bases more, that's a really good player. right? That's a guy who I think it's already forgotten that he did 5 wins in 2022 with Arizona, just because that kind of stuff happens in the desert and flies under the radar. Then he comes to Toronto and has been kind of a scapegoat for what people think is wrong with the team and what people think is wrong with the front office. But there's a lot of room for improvement and for a bounce back season with a simple tweak, right? Kevin Kiermaier comes to Toronto last year. I think a lot of people maybe had some concerns about how good a fit he is on the turf, right? Maybe he's a guy who's had injury issues. He had a hip replacement resurfacing, not a doctor at all. Going into 2023, had one of the best seasons of his career, quite frankly, in Toronto last year. Was a real stud for that team in center field. Had a great April, had a great May, and kind of tailed off a little bit, especially in the power department in the back half of the year. George Springer is one of the guys that this team is built around, right? And you've made the move to move him from center field to right field. You're hoping he's a bit more durable in right field. He's still a great defensive player out there. He's more of a leader on the team, trying to be a bit more of a vocal leader. What that looks like as he ages, because he's the guy with 3 years left on his contract at $25 million per season. What that looks like as he ages, if he's a right fielder with pretty good defense and an okay bat, not a very good contract. If he's a right fielder with really good defense and a pretty good bat, then we can start to work with that.
Can I ask you a question really quick?
Please.
If you were to roll out an outfield that you had to play, let's say it's the end of the season, 7 games left, and you have to win 5 of those 7 games, let's say, or some form of a big time run in order to make the playoffs in some fashion, whether that's winning the division, whatever it is, it's just to get into the playoffs and move on to the next round. What are you rolling with from an outfield perspective that you're not relying on matchups? I want you to pick the best 3 that you have in the outfield. Who are those guys?
I'm taking those 3 guys. I'm not over the pitching and defense aspect of how this team wins games. I think the plan for this team, they went and made their run at Ohtani and tried to have a bit better lineup. And then when that didn't happen, they decided to kind of run back. And I think we kind of got into some of this in when we talked about additions. A lot of this stuff is like for like, you know, IKF is a bit of a Whit Merrifield replacement. Kevin Kiermaier replaces Kevin Kiermaier from last season. Justin Turner replaces Brandon Belt from last season. A lot of this stuff is what it was. The only loss is Matt Chapman, but if you talk to a lot of Blue Jays fans, second half Matt Chapman, not a big loss really, you know, from our point of view, just because of what he was like. And we talked about the hole in Dalton Varsho's swing. The hole in Matt Chapman's swing was the zone, basically, in the second half of the season. Was an absolutely terrible player after winning April Player of the Month. Parlays that into kind of an interesting contract with the Giants, but there's an interesting view on, I guess, how you kind of look at that stuff. I'm not over trying to win games with pitching and defense, and I think those 3 guys in the outfield can turn a lot of doubles into flyouts.
Yeah, because I was going to say, like, you know, with that outfield trio, you don't make any changes with that? You like that trio? If you need, like, you need to win a win or go home, are you rolling that outfield?
You told me I can't play matchups. If we're going up against a lefty, I'm sitting Kevin Kiermaier, I'm playing Dalton Varsho in center field, and I'm playing Davis Schneider in left field. I think what Davis Schneider did last season cannot be understated. I think he saved the season with the hot run he went on as soon as he was called up. The moment in Boston, he comes up and in his first major league game, hits a home run over the Green Monster. That's the kind of stuff that, like, that is why people like baseball. That's why I like baseball. That's why it connects to you, right? It's just like, it doesn't happen like that in other sports. This is a guy who's non-prospect, fought his way up every level of the minor league system, hit his way everywhere, overcame every doubter, and he comes up and he just parks one over the Green Monster. It's beautiful, right? But he has that hot streak and then immediately cools off. He goes 0 for 36 at some point in September. They start to bench him. They don't show any trust in him. I still think, as a guy who can play against lefties, that he has a big role to fill on this team.
Respect. Let's talk about the infield. Bo Bichette and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. While I want to sit here and judge Vladdy, I would take him on the Cubs yesterday. And Bo Bichette, at some point during this offseason, had rumors that he was going to be traded to the Cubs, which is a pretty cool couple of days for Cubs fans, I'm not going to lie.
I think what's really fascinating, though, is what this is showing right now on FanGraphs, where you have IKF slated to play third base and Kevin Biggio to play second base. And I think this is strictly when it's a right-handed, when you're facing a left-handed pitcher or right-handed pitcher, whatever it is. Right now, who do you think should be the everyday starting third baseman, or do you think it's going to be a platoon-like situation there?
It's interesting because that's the spot that I think is unfilled, right? You look at how this team sets up, and I think catching, you're going to play a lot of the two of them. You know, first base and DH is Vladdy, and it's Justin Turner. Shortstop is Bo. Obviously, that's locked in. Kevin Biggio finished last season really hot. A lot of Blue Jays fans have started calling him 2B1. You know, I think that's a nice little fun thing for us to get on board with. He's a guy who came up through the minor leagues, obviously, with Bichette and with Guerrero as one of these three sons. So I think they've left themselves the ability to play matchups quite a bit. And I think the story of their offseason is they've really tried to build out their depth. We talked about last season where they didn't have a fourth outfielder. Their bench was a little thin. They ended up kind of relying on, and if you're not into the day-to-day of the Blue Jays, you might not have noticed this, but they ended up kind of being forced into relying on guys like Davis Schneider, guys like Ernie Clement, Spencer Horowitz, people who came up from Buffalo that are not non-prospects, but guys who are kind of 4A players or guys who have been overlooked. Like Ernie Clement, I think, is like the story from my perspective of the spring. And I think he's beaten out Santiago Espinal for that last bench spot that's available. Espinal is a 2022 All-Star when he hit lefties really well. So I think it's like, it's sort of a cautionary tale on Schneider, but you end up with what I think is a lot deeper bench. And I think that's a purposeful decision by the front office.
What about this catching situation? Do you like the situation that they're in? Do you wish that they would part ways with either name? Like, walk me through that.
I think my opinion here will probably diverge from what a lot of Blue Jays fans think. I think Danny Jansen is the guy. I think if you give Danny Jansen a full healthy season where he doesn't, he's been injured, right? The knock on Danny Jansen is the injuries. But a lot of them are freak injuries. He's been hit in the hand with a couple of pitches, had some broken fingers. He got hit in the hand catching his right hand, you know, it's kind of behind his back, ended up out there. There's been some kind of fluky injuries that have ended up not allowing him to be that kind of 90 to 100 game catcher. If he has that, and I think he's kind of due for one of these seasons, one of these times, I think he could very easily position himself as a top five to seven catcher in the major leagues, which I know is a thin position, but I think that speaks to, number one, how highly the Blue Jays rate him defensively. They glow about his game calling. They glow about how he handles the staff, how he does all his preparation, how he takes care of the things. Like, he's another coach on the field, right? Danny Jansen is one of these guys who coaches dream about and who coaches don't have to handhold through these kinds of things. But then you go back to the box, and he's a guy who's very, very aware of what his game is and what his approach is. And what he's going to try and do is he's going to try and pull the ball, and he's going to try and hit it in the air, and he's going to swing and miss a little bit, and he's going to work some walks. But for a team that needs power, Danny Jansen's a very, very viable number six hitter. Alejandro Kirk, you know, is the flip side of that. There are, I think, some very valid concerns about, obviously, his base running. He's a second percentile base runner in the entire Major League Baseball. But power has been a real issue for him, too. Going back to, everybody remembers, you know, Alejandro Kirk kind of bursting onto the scene, non-traditional build for a catcher. Hits so well at the start of 2022. One of the three best hitters, I think, in Major League Baseball by the All-Star break. Hasn't really hit for anything since then. A lot of the power has evaporated. The walk rate has kind of gone down as pitchers have realized you can start to throw him stuff in the zone. He's not going to beat you. He's going to hit a lot of singles. That's a guy that you're not really scared of on first base. The defensive stuff is coming along, but he's not necessarily there yet, right? Like, I think if you're looking at him in the abstract, you're only looking at Alejandro Kirk. He's a reasonably fine defensive catcher. The framing metrics love him. Like, love, 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 love him. He's a little noisy back there for me. I think some of that is a bit overstated. I think some of that is just kind of like bad calls bleeding into numbers. But the framing metrics really do love him. They have him as like a top five catcher in those categories, especially at the bottom of the zone. I just have a lot of worries about the bat. And I think for a guy like that, the bat really has to carry you, especially if you're looking at somebody like Danny Jansen being the 1A and 1B. I have a hard time seeing necessarily where he's providing value that Danny Jansen doesn't. And I think to be totally fair, a lot of Blue Jays fans 100% disagree with me. I think the fan favorite of those two is Kirk.
I would say from my experience of watching the Jays has been, why have two catchers that one, it feels like they favor Kirk, but if Kirk doesn't have his bat, then what the hell does he offer, really? And the beauty of having a defensive catcher that can also provide offense is kind of what Danny Jansen is. So then you at least have, then on your bench, you can have a potential defensive solid replacement that can also still hit. And then you can trade Alejandro Kirk and get prospects and go from there. I actually agree with you. I've always favored Danny Jansen. I don't necessarily like the whole Alejandro Kirk idea. I don't think it really favors them. And honestly, is kind of one of the reasons where I don't necessarily feel great about this team, because I think they're going to favor him. But I also see the part where if the guy pops off, he's pretty legit. Go ahead.
I want to be totally fair here, as we are, as we exist on a national view of baseball.
Not biased.
Alejandro Kirk missed a lot of spring training last year due to the birth of his child. His wife was I think it was a sort of complicated pregnancy. And so he stayed back and missed quite a bit of the start of spring training. But I think what's gotten interesting, and what I think is interesting, is that 2 years ago, they had kind of made up in their mind that one of those two catchers, whoever didn't start, was going to get a lot of the DH time. And over the last two off seasons, you've seen them make moves with Brandon Belt last year and with Justin Turner this year, where that's not necessarily the case. They want one to play four games a week, and they want one to play two games a week, and one of them might DH once a week or something like that. But I think the wear and tear in particular on Kirk has kind of worn down as we get into the back half of both seasons. And then the less Danny Jansen plays, the more likely he is to be healthy when you really need him.
One last guy to talk about here on the offensive side before we get over to pitching is Justin Turner. Are you very, very excited about this? Is this something that you have any concerns about? What has been your thought process since they signed JT onto the books?
Love the signing, first of all. I think that's a guy who is a 15-year vet, has hit in just about every single one of those seasons. That's a guy who can roll out of bed and hit a fastball. He can roll out of bed and give you a good at-bat just about every time. So love the signing, first of all. But then I think you get into, and I'm stealing this point from a friend of mine, I think it was Zeus, you get into the replacement for Brandon Belt. I think last year when they brought Brandon Belt in, they were kind of expecting him to be a bit of that veteran mentor to the younger hitters, to Vladdy, to Kirk, to Bo, these kinds of guys. And I think what they found was that Brandon Belt was a fun guy, a great guy to have around, really, really loose, you know, kept the dugout and clubhouse quite loose. But he wasn't necessarily the guy who was going to whip them into shape. He was just going to go and do his thing. And at the end of the day, he was going to have his 1-for-4 or 2-for-4. I think they think Justin Turner is going to be that kind of guy who snaps him around and says, you know, hey, focus on this. Here's what I'm doing. Here's what the pitcher's throwing. Here's what you have to do. Here's what you did wrong in that last at bat. It's more of a vocal leader than a lead by example that probably Brandon Belt was last year. I do want to touch on Clement, because he's kind of been, and him versus Espinal has been the spring training story. Just because this is a, you know, life when you're a team that's probably this good is the spring training conversation becomes about the 13th bat, right? And I think he's come in and just absolutely stolen that job from Santiago Espinal. Santiago Espinal was a great guy to have in 2022, but if you look at his first half numbers versus second half numbers, there's a bit of a drop off there. If you look at his numbers against lefties in 2022, there's a bit of a drop off, or is a quite significant drop off from 22 to 23. Whereas Clement has more defensive versatility. He can play second, short, third. He's got a lot of contact ability. The walk rate's pretty low. The power hasn't really translated. He hasn't really had a lot of success in the high minors hitting for power. But I think the stability that he provides has given him the leg up on that 13th job.
Perfect. And then I wanted to have a 20-minute segment on Daniel Vogelbach, but we'll save that for the end. Let's talk this rotation. Okay, so right now, like we said, Jose Barrios, Chris Bassett, Yusei Kikuchi. Sorry, I don't really care. Kevin Gausman and Bowden Francis. Who is Bowden Francis?
Bowden Francis is the guy. If you're out here in a fantasy baseball league, you should make sure with your last pick, you take Bowden Francis. Everybody all spring from the Blue Jays pitching staff has been talking about how good Bowden Francis is. It's actually Bowden, just for the record.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
Apologies to the Francis family. You know, that's on me. I have to lead by example. No, he's a guy who found an opportunity. He was a long reliever on last year's team and kind of a spot starter and had really good numbers in that. His sub 2 ERA last year in limited work and had really good numbers in AAA with Buffalo. He's kind of come in and taken hold of that fifth starter spot. Alek Manoah obviously has vacated that seat. That seat is available. There's a full row available for you that Alek Manoah is, you know, on the plane. He's in the exit row and he's left. Like they took him off in cuffs. The Manoah has given up that spot, but Bowden Francis has gone and gotten it, right? He's got great numbers in spring. He's got absolutely really good stuff. If you are listening to this and you're in any sort of 12-team, 14-team, 16-team fantasy league, make sure you take Bowden Francis with your last pick.
Wow. I think somebody took him in my league already, and I am kind of wondering, is this, yeah, he's already off the board.
I don't know your league with another Canadian. No, it's interesting, right? Because like I think the secret would be out. Let me do my best to pull us back here, because nobody likes to start with the fifth starter. When you look at what he did last year, it was really impressive, but it's in limited work because they got through last season with six starters, right? They have the four guys you mentioned. They have Gausman, Bassett, Kikuchi, and who am I forgetting? Barrios. And then you get through the first half with Manoah, and then you get through the second half with Hyunjin Ryu, who's obviously gone back to Korea. That's not going to happen again. It just doesn't work like that 2 years in a row. The ability to have depth is there, and I think Bowden Francis has been given a larger role, and I think he's going to grab it and really kind of run with it. Which isn't a slight at those other four guys. Those other four guys are the reason that this Blue Jays team is good, right? Chris Bassett is one of the best starters in the American League. Kevin Gausman is a Cy Young contender every time he takes the ball. Yusei Kikuchi had one of the strangest bounce back seasons I can really recall. He just decided to start throwing his curveball a lot after not throwing it at all. Turned out to be a great decision. And then Jose Barrios has been good every year of his career except 2022. You know, those guys are, like we talked about with Dylan Cease, guys who take the ball every fifth day, guys who give you length, guys who make sure the bullpen's pretty well rested. That rotation is the backbone of this team.
Any other names on there? I mean, Gausman is easily an AL Cy Young candidate. He is just wonderful to watch every day. Day in, day out. He is still a two-pitch pitcher, if I'm correct, right?
Yep. He'll throw you a breaking ball for a strike every once in a while. I think the murmuring was that he's looking to throw that slider a little bit more this year. He's had some discomfort, so he hasn't thrown anything in a spring training game yet as we sit here on March 14th. I'm not too worried about what that looks like for him. Maybe he misses a start or maybe he misses two, but I don't think it's a season affecting type deal. Two pitch pitcher. It's a really fun watch for me. Like I like that kind of, like, here it is. I'm going to throw you one of these two. You can try and pick one if you want. You're just going to swing and miss anyway.
One name I want to talk about before we get to the bullpen, because some folks may be wondering about this, is Yariel Rodriguez. What is his status right now? What are you hearing out of camp? Like, what are, because I know you're there every day, but what is the situation here? Because I think a lot of people thought that we'd probably see him in the starting rotation potentially.
You can't see me, but I'm super tan from Dunedin. It is an interesting story. I think probably the less they get from Yariel Rodriguez in 2024, the better. I think the way they've positioned this, because you got to remember too, Yariel Rodriguez goes into 2023 and has a really good couple outings for Cuba in the World Baseball Classic, and decides to opt out of the 2023 NPB season. Doesn't pitch at all. Decides to go and get his work in on the side, essentially, and worked his way towards a major league contract, which he gets. He gets a 4-year deal for $32 million with some escalators and some certain stuff. There's an interesting wrinkle in that contract, which is that the only year he can go to the minor leagues is 2024. 25, 26, 27, he can't be optioned down. But I think in 2024, there was an understanding that this is a really deep and strong rotation. The bullpen is deep that we'll get to. There may not necessarily be room for him as we sit here on March 14th, but he should be ready in AAA, and he should be able to get his length in a lower stress environment.
Interesting. Very, very interesting. Well, let's talk about the bullpen, because kind of loaded. Long reliever-wise, Mitch White, okay, in the middle of the rotation right now, per Fangraphs, Trevor Richards, Genesis Cabrera, flamethrower, left-handed pitcher, Chad Green, and Tim Mizea. Setup roles in the seventh would be Yaime Garcia. In the eighth would be Eric Swanson. And then the closer, the psycho, Jordan Romano. Let's start from wherever you want to there, brother, because, again, I think a lot of this is going to be relying on the bullpen this year.
Let's start at the top then, because this isn't how I like my bullpens, but it seems to be the way that they like their bullpens, which is super deep. So Jordan Romano, one of the best closers in the American League, not a question about that. He's a guy who goes out there and throws high 90s or the hell of a slider. There are certain times where he gets really in love with the slider, and you're sort of in a one run game, and he's thrown three in a row, and there's a guy on second base, and you're sort of pulling your hair out. But he's going to end up with 35 saves at the end of the year. He's going to pitch in a lot of close games, and he's going to probably win in a lot of close games, especially at home. That home field advantage seems to really motivate him. He's got his own walkout and kind of entrance music. He's obviously from the area. You know, it's really funny. Like, as a Canadian, you get these Canadian guys in baseball, and broadcasters fall over themselves. I mentioned where he's from and what he went through and what he did. Jordan Romano is almost so good that they kind of forget, oh, right, he's Canadian. He's from here. He's a local boy. It's like, he's just one of the best closers in the American League. It's just that simple. It's fastball, slider. It's not, you know, anything crazy. He's just going to try and go out there and blow up by three guys in a row.
He's pretty good. He is pretty good. Where are your concerns right now with this pen?
My concerns are the amount of money that's been allocated to it. So there, every single person in the bullpen, and you went through them, makes a reasonably significant amount of money. Chad Green makes $10.5 million this year. He makes $10.5 million next year. Jimmy Garcia makes $6 million this year. There's a lot of guys.
Is it Yaime or Jimmy?
It's Jimmy. I know it's a Y.
Are
it's,
you serious? It's, oh my God.
Jimmy so Garcia. Jaime was the lefty. He was like sinker slider, old Cardinal.
I mean, thank God I had to invest money into getting this podcast going, because golly, I just don't deserve to be paid to do this. Why am I?
It's Jimmy. So there you go. So there's a lot of interesting stuff to be gleaned from that, which is that I think, number one, they're really not going to go very many innings this year with a bad pitcher on the mound. They've invested in the depth in the rotation. You talk about Yariel Rodriguez probably starting the year in the minor leagues. They've invested in the depth in the bullpen too. They've got 5, 6, 7 guys who you think can have the ball in medium to high leverage situations. You've got Obviously, Romano's your closer. You've got Chad Green. You've got Eric Swanson. The Teoscar trade, just as a sidebar, the Teoscar trade has looked like an absolute masterclass so far. Eric Swanson's one of the better eighth inning guys in the league. They kind of ran him into the ground last year, so the September numbers kind of blew up his overall line a little bit. But Eric Swanson's one of the best relievers in the league. He's fastball split. It's super interesting, him and Kevin Gausman kind of on the same team doing the same thing. Tim Mayza, if you've never heard of him, I don't blame you. We're starting to call him
wonderful. He is wonderful, by the way. I don't mean to interrupt. He's wonderful in MLB The Show. Just want to throw that out there, but go ahead.
We are they gave him a 69 overall rating, and a lot of the relievers are for this year. Sub 2 ERA last year, is one of the better lefty relievers stat-wise in all of Major League Baseball. We're trying to get this going, so if Big Fly Pod listeners can help out. We're going to call him the Bald Bandit. He's just going to go out there and kind of thieve you away an inning or two. If you have an eye out for the Bald Bandit, he may be unassuming, but he truly is one of the better lefty relievers in all of baseball, at least statistically. You get into Genesis Cabrera, who's probably the lowest paid reliever in that bullpen, but he's your other lefty option. He's a guy whose fastball breaking ball they got for free from the Cardinals, who DFA'd him. Command kind of comes and goes. But that's the way these things go with your fifth or sixth bullpen arm, especially your second lefty option. Chad Green, I'm just having a hard time wrapping my head around. They got this deal done, and it was kind of a confusing deal. So they signed him to a fairly cheap deal for 2023, but there was sort of some cascading options where the Blue Jays could offer him 2 years, $21 million. And if they didn't offer him that, then Chad Green could accept like 1 year, $8 million. And if they didn't offer that, then they could offer him like 3 years, $15 million. It was an absolutely bonkers deal to try and register with the league office. But the Blue Jays, looking at what he did coming off Tommy John in the back half of 2023, decided to give him that 2 years, $21 million, because they think he can be the Yankee version of Chad Green. And from my perspective, and I'm happy to be wrong about this, from my perspective, I'm just not seeing that as a good use of $10.5 million. But the flip side of that is that if that goes wrong, there's plenty of depth behind him too. You mentioned Mitch White, who's a guy who's thrown harder this spring, you know, has kind of added a splitter. There's some certain things. If you're in this bullpen and sitting with Kevin Gausman and Eric Swanson, just ask him about the splitter. See what's going on there. Just try it. Throw it a couple of times. See what's going on. Might work. Might not. There's depth in there. You know, you talk about Trevor Richards, who's a guy with one of the best changeups in baseball, who kind of got hit in his second inning of work last year. When he goes three outs, he's really been quite valuable. But if you force him into longer and longer outings, then that's where he's proven to break a little bit. And then I think, you know, first guy up for me is Ricky Tiedemann. If you need another lefty option, this is a guy who's one of the better left-handed pitching prospects in baseball. But obviously, we talked about how the rotation's deep enough already, and there's not a lot of options for him.
I was going to ask about that really quick. I apologize for interrupting you, because is this a situation for this kid right now? Because he's a name that populates all the time in dynasty leagues to other things that is in regards to fantasy baseball, but from a prospect ranking standpoint, a lot of exciting stuff about this kid. I did want to hone in on just him because we are running up on the 40-minute mark. I wanted to keep this to about 40 to 45 minutes, depending upon how in-depth we got, because I think what I'm hearing is that this kid is gross and he's going to be a wonderful Blue Jay for a long time. What is the ideal situation for good old Ricky this upcoming season?
Well, he's definitely gross. Absolutely filthy. He, you know, it's high 90s.
Does not shower.
he's got a tattoo on his left arm that goes all the way onto the back of his hand. It's a great picture. Look, I'm
really
yeah. I'm just keep an eye
so
out.
So he
for
goes.
That.
Does he go? So he goes left bicep up to the.
Well, let's get all the way into it, because I think what really affected is
the Cubs need to trade for him tomorrow.
Because what affected his season in 2023 was that left bicep. No, it was, so he had left bicep soreness, and then he had an issue with his left shoulder too. So he's limited to 44.
It's the tattoo.
I haven't ruled it out. I haven't ruled it out. If he starts to get, you know, metacarpal injuries, then I think we're nailed in on what I'm gonna get into. This is the optimistic case here. I'm gonna get into my own true feelings here in a second.
Go ahead.
The optimist. So he's got bicep injury and then a left shoulder injury last season. Two separate IL stints that limit him to 44 innings in the entirety of his minor league season. And this is a guy who didn't pitch a lot in 2022. He was a JUCO pick in 2021, third round pick who ended up a lot stronger and a lot buffer than I think everybody kind of realized he would. The Blue Jays kind of just gave him a weight program and sent him home. And he came back to spring training the next year, throwing 3 miles an hour harder and looking like an absolute unit. So there's a lot of stuff there that would portend towards growth, but I just have a hard time getting past the injuries and the workload. He hasn't thrown 5 innings in a game since July 1st, 2022. That was the last time he even qualified for a win as a starting pitching prospect. That's a concern. 44 innings in all of his entire 2023 minor league season. He goes and throws 18 innings in the Fall League after and wins Arizona Fall League Pitcher of the Year, but he's really not facing a lot of very good hitters in that league. It's something where I think the less pressure we as a collective can put on Ricky Tiedemann, the better. I think if you're looking at 2025, 2026, then we're into some better territory. But if we're being totally honest, and if I'm giving you my Chris Boulding opinion, I call him Fraudy T. He's just not my kind of pitching prospect.
Then let's my last question to you, B, is that you first off, before I give you a question, your breakdown of this team is the best breakdown that I've heard of any team here thus far. You're absolutely electric with your takes. And yes, I love you too, buddy. There has been, I never knew about what I found out tonight about the Blue Jays and the in-depth description that you gave about each of the situations. It's unbelievable. You're off the charts, buddy. I do want to hear, do you have, if you don't right now, it's totally fine. Because I think Ricky is a very just it really lies that situation right now with your prospect channel, if you want to call it. But is there a name at all that people should be looking out for that you really, really like right now from the prospect side of things?
I'm gonna drop the unbiased journalism act here. I'm gonna give you a guy who is a 9th round pick of the Toronto Blue Jays last year, a guy named Sam Shaw, who is a high school draft pick out of a high school called Lambrick Park Secondary School in Victoria, British Columbia, played for a club called the Victoria Eagles. This is a guy who's years and years and years away from the major leagues, but I happen to work with the Victoria Eagles. So I'll tell you right now, this guy can hit. He might not know too much. Like he's a guy who is going to get to the major leagues on the strength of his bat. He's going to get to the major leagues on the strength of his contact ability and his eye. This isn't necessarily a near-term prospect, but this is a guy who I think is flying under the radar who can really, really play ball.
I love that. I love a little hometown call out. Oh, hometown. Or I don't even know. I'm trying to be Canadian right now, and it ain't working. So
that's a good call out, eh?
Yeah, it was pretty good, eh? But, buddy, you've been unbelievable. This has been so much fun. I just literally... Folks, if you watch the YouTube video version of this, I just sit back and listen because CB, we like to call, went off on this episode and we let him cook. And the Blue Jays jersey is flying high on his chest right now. That was very enjoyable. And this is a team that will be such a fascinating storyline for this upcoming season. Could we see them making some big moves here, potentially at the trade deadline? We shall see. Bacon, thanks so much again, brother, for jumping on with me. This was so much fun. Absolutely. It was my pleasure. And to everyone that tuned in, thank you so much for listening to another edition of the Big Fly Pod. We'll talk to you again here.